So a little bit of Parsha. Parsha's Ba'alosa, yeah? Unless you're in Israel, then it's Shlach. You heard that Shaila, that someone sent me a Shaila this week that they had reserved an Airbnb for in Israel for Parsha Shlach. So they sent an email earlier this week. I'm looking forward to coming next week. And the person in Israel said, "What do you mean next week? This week." And so they weren't charging for... You know, so you have next week too, but you're paying for this week because we blocked it up. I'm like, you reserved an Airbnb without mentioning any identifying dates other than the parsha. Like, it was the only identifying date that they used. It's really unbelievable. No. But anyway, there is an old saying. I googled it, and it's attributed to H. Jackson Brown. Anyone know who H. Jackson Brown is? I don't, but hopefully he's not someone too offensive. But anyway, the saying goes that there's nothing as expensive as a missed opportunity. I mean, the logic is when you miss an opportunity, you can't really make it up. It's sort of lost forever. There's another quote attributed to Thomas Edison that opportunity is missed by most people because it comes dressed in overalls and looks a lot like work. Now, one notable exception to both of those ideas seems to be the ability to participate in Pesach Sheni, which we have in this week's parasha. Because here we had a missed opportunity, but it wasn't because it was dressed in overalls and looked like work. It had nothing to do with laziness. To the contrary, it was people who were busy doing a mitzvah and therefore were ineligible because of the tumah that they had from bringing Pesach Rishon. So it wasn't because of laziness, and it was because of engagement in the mitzvah. And it seems that the opportunity wasn't lost forever. They had the opportunity to make it up, and that's the whole concept of Pesach Sheni. Pasuk tells us, "Ve'hiya nashim asher ha'itmeim l'nefesh adam, v'lo yochlu la'asos ha'pesach v'yomahu, v'yikuvu l'fnei Moshe l'fnei Aaron v'yomahu, v'yomu anashim ha'im e'lov, anachni itmeim l'nefesh adam, lo menigara l'vilti akreves karban Hashem v'mo'ado b'toch v'nei Yisrael." Why should we lose out just because we were tamei that we shouldn't be able to bring the karban? So they were tamei, they couldn't participate in Karban Pesach, so they asked for the ability to participate at a later time. So I have three questions. First of all, of all the mitzvos in the Torah where there could have been a makeup date, where there could have been a way to not say over zman batel karbano, that it's over, you missed it. Now, of all the mitzvot, why is Karban Pesach the lone mitzvah that is an entire parsha dedicated to a makeup date? Why would Karban Pesach more than any other mitzvah be something that you can make up later, right? We don't say, "Oh, you know, I missed Lulav this year." "Oh, don't worry, you have Sukkot Sheni, where you can go, and you can take Lulav for a week in February, you know, when things are a little slower and you have a little more time." We don't have anything like that. So what is it about Pesach, Karban Pesach in particular, that lends itself, al pi hashkafa at least, to this idea of a makeup date? Second of all, Pesach Sheni was in fact one of four separate times in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't immediately know the answer to a question. Right? Even the greatest rabbi of all time did not know the answer to every question immediately. Four separate occasions. There was a question that came up and he didn't know the answer. He didn't know the answer for Benos Slavchad regarding Yerusha Sabas. He didn't know what to do with the Megadev. He didn't know what to do with the Mekoshesh. And then you have Pesach Sheni. Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah was, of course, very unique among Nevi'im. The Rambam identifies what made Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah unique. One of the qualities of Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah that made him so unique was that he could speak to Hashem on demand. He didn't have to wait for the hope of a prophetic vision in a dream that may or may not come. When he wanted to speak to Hashem, he spoke to Hashem. And yet, we find that of the four times that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know the halacha, we only find in two of those instances that he actually went and asked Hashem. That he actually said, "You know what? I don't know. I have to speak to the Ribbono Shel Olam." When it comes to Bnos Slavchad, the Torah says, "Ve'ikrav Moshe's mishpatan lefnei Hashem," that he brought their mishpat in front of Hashem, and the Pesach Sheni says, "Imdu ve'eshma mayitzada Hashem." Now let's wait and see what Hashem is going to say. Moshe never pursued the matter directly with the Ribbono Shel Olam when it came to the Mekoshesh, when it came to the Megadev. So why exactly the difference? Why in these two cases does Moshe Rabbeinu initiate to try to figure out what the Ribbono Shel wants, when this is, these are only two of the four places that he doesn't know the halacha. In addition to that, in addition to certain halachos that Moshe Rabbeinu was unaware of, there are also other set, there's another list of items that he had trouble understanding how to implement. Meaning he knew the halacha, but he didn't know exactly how to implement a number of items. The Gemara Menachos Daf Chavtes tells us, Shalosh Devarim Hayu Kashin Lo Lemoshe, At Shehera Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'etzba'o. That there were three things. Moshe Rabbeinu, he knew the halacha, but he couldn't figure out how to implement it, how to apply it, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him Be'etzba'o. The Eluhain, and they are, Menorah V'Rosh Chodesh U'Shratzim. And that's why, as Rashi highlights, the menorah was made by Hashem. Now, what was the big challenge in understanding let's take particularly the menorah, because that's the one that relates to this week's parasha. What exactly was the big challenge in understanding? Meaning, you learn the Mishnayos at the end of Masechta Sukkah, for example, and it describes these giant menorahs and the Pirchei Kohuna climbing up these huge ladders to drop oil in these menorahs and lit up every chatzar in Yerushalayim. I don't know, you need a picture for that? You can pretty much picture what it looks like, no? Well, why is that so hard to imagine? So, okay, so seven branch candelabra. So hard to imagine. He couldn't picture what exactly the menorah is supposed to be and supposed to look like. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to be Mare Be'etzba'o, the menorah. So in order to answer these questions, let's develop a yesod. A yesod really in chinuch, a yesod in parenting, and in general in motivating people and in expressing values. I remember when I was a teenager, I had this thing that I hated asking my parents for money. Once I was newly married, I got used to it, but as a teenager, like I really did not enjoy doing that. I always felt like it was really a waste of money to buy most of the things that I was buying. And, you know, my father did nothing to dispel that notion that, it was an accountant, you know. So, however, whenever I wanted to buy Svarim, no matter the cost, there was always a blank check. To buy Svarim, there was always a blank check. I never asked my parents about why that was the policy, but I could only assume that why that was the policy, right? I mean, there are two approaches to chinuch. One approach would be tell your kids what not to do, and the other approach is to wait for them to express an interest in something good, in something valuable, and to do whatever you can to cultivate and encourage that interest. Meaning to do whatever you can when they show that spark of something, of some interest in something positive, to like jump on that and, you know, do whatever you can to help build that interest. So if I wanted to go to a movie on a late Mitzvah Shabbos, you know, it was like, all right, just be safe, come back on time. But, if I wanted to buy Svarim, then I was made to feel like there's nothing that my parents would rather spend their money on than whatever Svarim I was gonna come home with. The Gemara in Brachos stuff, I remember when there was a Svarim store in Far Rockaway called Kitov, the guy who owned the store had a deal with my brother, with my parents, that whenever my brother bought a Gemara there, if he comes back when he finishes it and he can give him a quick bechina on the Masechta, he gets his money back. So my brother didn't even cost them any money. He had the same deal with me, but I wasn't coming back and taking any bechina. So I cost them a lot of money. My brother didn't even cost them any money. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Hey tells us that lo kedoros harishonim doros achronim, that the later generations are not nearly as pious as the earlier generations. And the Gemara explains in what way is there this difference in piety, that doros harishonim hayu machnisin perosei in derech traksimon kedei lechayven b'maisin, that the doros harishonim would bring their peros into the home in a way that dafka is going to be mechayiv them in maisa, whereas doros achronim machnisim perosei in derech gagos, derech hatzeros, derech karpefos, kedei lepatron min maisa. The later generations would do whatever they can. They would find whatever out there is, whatever way there is, to avoid a chiyuv of maisos. So they're doing things halachically. They did everything halachically correctly, but they did whatever they could to avoid being chayiv in trumos and maisos. So the truth is that the doros haachronim you know, they didn't do something, Aveira, they didn't do any Aveira. You know, they brought in the produce through the roof legitimately, and that legitimately exempts them from Jews and Maestros. But the desire to exempt themselves from a mitzvah is just a poor reflection of values. Meaning there are things you could do that are okay and that are fine and that it works, but what you're excited to do and what you're trying to avoid doing is a very, very clear reflection of what a person's values are. The Sefer Otzros HaTorah tells a story of a Talmud who noticed one night, he came back, I guess, from a chasr or something very late at night, and it was a frigid winter night, and he saw the Chafetz Chaim wandering the streets late on a frigid winter night at like 2 in the morning. And the Talmud happened to have seen the Chafetz Chaim's sister the next day, and he asked Chafetz Chaim's sister, like, why would he be out on such a cold night? And she said, oh, it's 3 nights in a row that he was already out all night, because he was trying to see if the moon would come out, would shine through, from, you know, the clouds would disperse long enough for the moon to shine through so that he could say Kiddush Levana. Think for a moment. How long does it take you when the Gabbai announces on Motzai Shabbos, unfortunately there's no visible Levana? How long does it take you to race home and make sure not to look up at the sky on the way just in case there might be a Levana and you might be held back for another few minutes? Meaning that's like, you know, that goes in the Jewish book of awesome. Oh, no Kiddush Levana? Amazing. Chafetz Chaim up all night looking around to try to hope that maybe there's a chance for Kiddush Levana. Meaning what we look for, what we look to try to do, what we initiate, where we try to show initiative, where we try to show that we have a sense of interest, is a major statement of our values. And that goes back to answer all of the questions we started with. The reason there's a makeup date for Korban Pesach, more so than any other mitzvah, is very simple. This is the one that the Jewish people requested a makeup date. That Lamanikara, they didn't ask it about anything else. They asked it about Korban Pesach. And when people express a desire to be able to perform a mitzvah, Hashem is likely to respond like a good parent with, what? You want Korban Pesach? Okay, good. We'll do whatever we can to accommodate that. When we don't even bother asking for it, certainly we're not going to receive such opportunities. There's a beautiful sefer called Chelkas Binyamin. There are a couple from called Chelkas Binyamin. The one I'm referring to is Rabbi Binyamin Kamenetsky Zichrono Levracha, Rabbi Yaakov's son, who was the Rashiva of my elementary school that I went to, South Shore. So after he died, it's an amazing sefer, because after he died, Rabbi Kamenetsky used to speak all the time at bar mitzvahs and things like that. He started this elementary school, and he was Rashiva for, you know, much of his life. And so he's always speaking at bar mitzvahs, and he never really didn't have a computer in to like type up his speeches or his Divrei Torah. But like whenever he thought of a good idea, he would just grab a dinner napkin and write it down, or a scrap of paper or whatever. So after he died, according to the introduction of the Sefer, they went through his house and they just found like dinner napkins and backs of receipts and like things all over the place. And they put out two volumes of Chiddushei Torah from dinner napkins, basically, that where he jotted down an idea, which is really just like incredible, you know, the value of writing down Torah. So anyway, so Rabbi Yom Kamenetsky Zitzal quotes, I don't know, I didn't read through the whole sefer, I can't imagine he does this too much, he quotes Hagrid Soloveitchik Zitzal Mi Boston, so it must be printed somewhere else in the name of the Rav also, I would imagine, that the reason Moshe Rabbeinu consulted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately about Benos Slavchan and about Pesach Sheni was because in both cases the parties themselves were interested in trying to connect to a mitzvah. Yishev Eretz Yisrael in the case of Benos Slavchan and Korban Pesach in the case of the Temeim on Pesach Rishon. And in cases where people express a level of passion for something, so Moshe Rabbeinu reasoned, Halalu's reason heim, that if these people are going to show the initiative, well then I'm going to go out of my way as much as I don't want to bother the Ribbono Shalom, I don't want to take advantage of my, you know, license to go in whenever I want and to ask him things, but if the people are going to show initiative, I'm going to do whatever I can to cultivate that. In the same sefer, Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky explains that the base of the menorah represents the Torah, and the kaftorim and the prachim represent the midos tovos, So Moshe Rabbeinu was not confused about how to make a seven-branch menorah. He was confused how Lima Torah will turn a person into a Bal Midos Tovos. Meaning, if the base of the menorah represents Torah, and the Kaftorim and the Frachim represent Midos Tovos, so how does that happen? How is it that Limud HaTorah brings a person to become a Bal Midos Tovos? And Hashem's response was, take the gold and throw it into a fire. Meaning that if you show passion in your learning, if there's fire in your Torah, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help to form the Torah personality. And the Torah personality, by definition, is going to have Midos Tovos, going to be a reflection of Mahu Afata. So when we express that interest and that initiative, we are rewarded with that extra level of Siyata Deshmaya. And it's just like such a basic yesod in how to properly be mechanech. We were discussing yesterday, off any recordings, but we were discussing yesterday the idea of what we honor, what we respect, what we get excited about. And that's a huge value statement that people pick up on. If the only people that we honor are people with a lot of money, and the things that make our eyes light up is when we describe someone's, the kind of car someone drives, or the kind of house someone lives in, or the vacations a person goes on, or whatever, the way a person travels, or whatever it might be. So then that's a value statement. It's not just stam that we're noting something. If that's what gets us excited, if that's what energizes us, it's a value statement. Everyone around us picks up on that and sees, whether it be children or whether it be anybody else, or friends, spouses, everyone will pick up on that value. Whereas if a person gets excited about people who are Yirei Hashem, people who are Obdei Hashem, people who are Tamid Chachamim, and they that's also a value statement. So that's ultimately the message of Pesach Sheni, is that a person shows that, look, I know I missed something, but it really matters to me that I missed it, and it's really upsetting to me that I missed it. So that's a value statement, that when we show initiative, the Ribono Shlom is going to want to cultivate that interest in something good. Okay.